The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press. Our first article was published on December 7 and entitled, The Famed Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris Reopens to Great Fanfare. Paris. Notre Dame reopened its doors for the first time since a fire in 2019 nearly destroyed Paris' beloved 12th century cathedral. World leaders, including President-elect Donald Trump, America's First Lady Jill Biden, Britain's Prince William, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, gathered on December 6 among some 1,500 guests to celebrate the restoration of the landmark widely considered to be a pinnacle of French architectural heritage. Notre Dame reopening falls victim to bad weather. After more than 5 years of renovation, the reopening of Notre Dame, like the Paris Olympics before it, fell victim to bad weather. Forecasted strong winds upended the running order of the reopening ceremony on Saturday evening and forced the whole thing indoors. The original plan was for an initial outdoor state ceremony led by President Emmanuel Macron, after which Archbishop Laurent Ulrich was to have taken over, leading rites and a religious service inside the cathedral. Those plans would have emphasized France's carefully policed divide between state and church. But expected stormy winds prompted the Paris diocese and Macron's office to telescope the ceremonies together to be held inside the cathedral. It's the second time this year that weather has intervened in significant moments for Paris. Rains drenched the July 26 opening ceremony of the Summer Games, dampening the show and the spirits of some spectators. Notre Dame in numbers. Perhaps not surprisingly, for such a big cathedral, some of the numbers that help tell the story of Notre Dame's reopening are on the very big side, too. The bell that sounded to signal the start of the service weighs 13 tons, making it the cathedral's largest. It has a name, Emmanuel, given to it by King Louis XIV after it was cast in 1683. It rings in F-sharp. Inside, 42,000 square meters of stonework were cleaned during the renovation, an area equivalent to roughly 6 soccer pitches. The first stone of Notre Dame was laid in 1163. The thunderous great organ of Notre Dame that was heard in public at Saturday service for the first time since April 15, 2019, has 7,952 pipes, the largest as broad as a human torso, the smallest no larger than a pen. The renovated giant console that controls the instrument has 5 keyboards of 56 notes each, foot pedals for 30 notes, and 115 stops. Unseen, above the congregation and the repaired vaulted ceilings, is a framework of beams holding up the roof and spire, so dense and intricate that it's nicknamed the forest. Some 2,000 oak trees were felled to rebuild it. Devout Catholics say the Notre Dame Cathedral reopening will nourish us. For devout Catholics Patricia and Cyril Brenner, who were waiting in the cold outside Notre Dame for its reopening service that they were not invited to, was the place to be. The couple traveled by night train from Cannes on the French Riviera, famous for its movie festival, to be among the onlookers Saturday, hoping for some of the 40,000 spots set aside for the public on the banks of the River Seine facing the cathedral. They bought their train tickets 6 months ago. I'm from Cannes. It's a bit like the festival. You have to be there to experience it, said Patricia, 65. It's a pilgrimage for us. Cyril, 66, said they were the only members of their parish to make the long trip. "We like to be at the heart of things, and as Christians, it will nourish us," he said. When Cyril said they'd felt distress and sadness when Notre Dame burned, they both also noted how sacred relics, statues, and the golden cross on the altar, almost miraculously, survived the inferno. They both marveled at the renovation works that have not only eradicated nearly all traces of the fire inside, but made it more resplendent than ever. Cathedral's renovation chief hopes the reopening is a moment of unity. Philippe Jost, Notre Dame Cathedral renovation chief, said the reopening is an opportunity for unity, as so many divisions remain in the world. "We hope it will be a great moment of unity for the French people, for guests from all over the world, and for spectators from all over the world," he said. "Notre Dame de Paris unites. There are so many divisive factors. An event like this must unite, must help concord and peace to grow throughout the world." Notre Dame's rector emphasizes the importance of the separation of church and state. Olivier Ribaudot-Dumas, the Notre Dame rector, called the reopening an important moment that has been awaited a very long time. "Notre Dame de Paris is the very sign of the presence of a soul in the heart of our city. It's important for Parisians. It's important for Catholics. It's important for the French and for the whole world." "In general," he said, "the sphere of politics doesn't enter the sphere of the religious, and shouldn't. In the same way, the religious sphere doesn't enter politics. The Archbishop of Paris invited the President of the Republic to speak inside the cathedral as a sign of the unity that could be seen in the reconstruction. The Archbishop allowed him to speak inside because the weather conditions did not allow him to speak outside." Guests filed into Notre Dame Cathedral for the ceremonies. Guests gradually filling the cathedral for the evening reopening ceremonies reveled at the renovated interiors, with many whipping out cell phones to take souvenir photos. "It's a sense of perfection," said François Lepage, who works for the Notre Dame Foundation that raised nearly half of the nearly 900 million euros of donations. He last set foot in the cathedral in 2021. "It's night and day," said Reverend Andriy Morvas, a Ukrainian pastor who leads the Cathedral of St. Vladimir the Great Church in Paris Saint-Germain-des-Prés. It had been nearly 10 years since he last stepped foot inside Notre Dame. "God is very powerful. He can change things." He expressed hope that the cathedral could help bring peace to his country, and he drew heart from the expected attendance of Ukraine's president. "I hope Notre Dame and Mary will help us resolve the conflict," he said. The next article was published on November 27 and written by Giovanna Del Ordo. "Border Patrol trains more chaplains as the job and polarizing immigration debate rattle agents." Dania Beach, Florida. As immigration remains a hotly contested priority for the Trump administration after playing a decisive role in the deeply polarized election, the Border Patrol agents tasked with enforcing many of its laws are wrestling with growing challenges on and off the job. More are training to become chaplains to help their peers as they tackle security threats, including the powerful cartels that control much of the border dynamic, and witness growing suffering among migrants, all while policies in Washington keep shifting and public outrage targets them from all sides. "The hardest thing is people don't know what we do, and we've been called terrible names," said Brandon Frederick, a Buffalo, New York-based agent, some of whose family members have resorted to name-calling. Earlier this month, he served as as a training academy instructor to Border Patrol chaplains, whose numbers have almost doubled in the last 4 years. It's an effort to help agents motivated by the desire to keep the U.S. borders safe cope with mounting distress before it leads to family dysfunction, addiction, even suicide. Chaplains Academy trains agents to tackle emotional distress. During the latest academy, held at a Border Patrol station near Miami, Frederick evaluated pairs of chaplains in training as they role-played checking on a fellow agent who hadn't reported for work. They discovered he'd been drowning in alcohol, his angst, at being deployed away from his family for the holidays at one of the border's hotspots. The training scenario was achingly real for the South Florida-based agent role-playing the distressed one. He had struggled when relocated for 18 months to Del Rio, Texas, away from his two children. And also for Frederick, who overcame alcoholism before becoming a chaplain. Interacting with chaplains can reduce the agent's reluctance to express their emotional trials, Frederick said. My mission every day is that there's not a young agent Frederick suffering alone, he added. Frederick, a Catholic, has been an agent for more than 15 years and worked tragic cases like a smuggling attempt where an Indian family froze to death at the Canadian-U.S. border. Confidential support with the side of faith. Unlike the police or military, which recruits faith leaders for help with everything from suicide prevention to dealing with the unrest after George Floyd's murder, the Border Patrol trains mostly lay agents endorsed by their faith denominations to become chaplains. After graduating, they join about 240 other chaplains and resume their regular jobs, but they're constantly on call to provide largely confidential care for their 20,000 fellow agents' well-being. While most chaplains are Christian, Muslim and Jewish agents also have been trained recently. The chaplains don't offer faith-specific worship and only bring up religion if the person they're helping does first. I'm not there to convert or proselytize, said Academy instructor Jason Willett, an agent in Casa Grande, Arizona, and a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. A chaplain since 2015, he was previously involved in the agency's non-religious mental health-focused peer support program after a fellow agent died in a car accident. Agent Jesus Vasavilbaso decided to join the Border Patrol's peer support program after witnessing the trauma of repeatedly responding to calls from lost and dying migrants in the unforgiving desert southwest of Tucson. Sometimes you go home and keep thinking you can't find them, he said. That's why it's so important we check on each other all the time. Training to deal with deaths at the border. At the most recent Chaplain Academy, which lasted 2.5 weeks, the 15 chaplains in training, mostly from the Border Patrol, plus a few Fish and Wildlife Service and Bureau of Land Management officers, practiced real-life scenarios, including responding to a deadly wreck involving agents and notifying a spouse their loved one died on the job. Chris Day, a chaplain since 2017, evaluated trainees trying to comfort an agent who kept screaming that it was all his fault his partner was killed. In the training scenario, their car crashed as they chased someone crossing the border illegally. Day praised the trainees' efforts to get the agent to talk, but advised them not to say, "I understand," because you don't. Later, Day told the class he had helped an agent who watched the smugglers he was chasing smash their car into a family, gravely injuring a toddler. He said the agent had ugly cried at the scene and kept repeating that his child was the same age. so Day took him aside briefly and followed up after. "We hugged it out," said Day, a Baptist with the psalm verse tattooed on his right arm. He also has helped the wife of an agent who killed herself and prayed for migrants who request it. More than 100 migrants have died so far this year in New Mexico's desert, where Day is stationed. "The smells and visuals stay with you forever," Day said. "We have empathy for people coming across." Combining vigilance with empathy on and off duty. Trying to comfort migrant children in their custody, including the thousands who cross the border alone, is also a wrenching task. At the academy, Trinidad Balderas, a father and medic in McAllen, Texas, and Yara Santiago, a former school teacher who runs a Border Patrol migrant processing center at the other end of the southern border in San Diego, said they both seek to provide some calm in the chaos of the children's situation. "One tries to give them support within the limits of what your work allows. I always have the biggest smile," Santiago said. Border Patrol Assistant Chief and Chaplaincy Program Manager Spencer Hatch highlighted the need to maintain both the hypervigilance of law enforcement and the humanitarian instinct to empathize with migrants and fellow agents. He also taught strategies to protect the agents' families from spillover trauma. Divorces increase when agents are redeployed during migrant surges, some up to 9 times over 18 months during the record border crossings early in the Biden administration. Many agents' children are scared to reveal their parents' jobs, especially in border communities. They might be going to school with children of cartel members or of undocumented migrants or those who see the Border Patrol as keeping people from living the American dream. In Hatch's words, "That's a really hard thing to deal with as things tend to flip from one side to the other, and we're still in the crossfire," he added. Hatch uses a case study of moral injury, a 2021 incident in Del Rio, where agents on horseback appeared in some viral photos to be whipping immigrants with their reins, which a federal investigation later determined had not happened. "For one picture to be taken out of context and to have the highest levels of government shaming those people, that was very disheartening. That hurt all of us," Hatch said. Wrestling with moral standards and a higher calling. Dealing with that dissonance of enforcing immigration laws, including rescuing migrants and hearing their jobs demonized by the public, is a major challenge, said Tucson area chaplain Jimmy Stout. He was one of the first 4 chaplains when the program was started through a grassroots effort at the southern border in the late 1990s. "We go over this on day one," Stout said. What they're doing, meeting their personal standards. For the agents who got their chaplain's pins last week, those standards now involve a higher calling, too. Class speaker Matt Kinnery, a father of 3 who joined the Army after 9/11 and the Border Patrol in El Paso, Texas in 2009, decided to become a chaplain after an on-duty car wreck so bad the doctor called his survival miraculous. "The guy upstairs has got something for you." "I took that to heart," Kinnery said. Chaplains helped his wife, Gina, then, and the couple is now eager to support his new role. "Even in moments of uncertainty, your presence is often enough," the 6-foot-5-inch agent told the graduating class before his voice broke. Several instructors in the audience wiped away tears. Our last article was published on November 28 and written by Jamie Keaton. AI Jesus avatar tests man's faith in machines and the divine. Lucerne, Switzerland. Would you trust an AI Jesus with your innermost thoughts and troubles? Researchers and religious leaders on November 27 released findings from a two-month experiment through ART in a Catholic chapel in Switzerland, where an avatar of Jesus on a computer screen tucked into a confessional took questions by visitors on faith, morality, and modern-day woes, and offered responses based on scripture. The idea, said the chaplain's theological assistant, was to recognize the growing importance of artificial intelligence in human lives, even when it comes to religion, and explore the limits of human trust in a machine. After the two-month run of the Deus in Machina exhibit at Peter's Chapel, starting in late August, some 900 conversations from visitors, some came more than once, were transcribed anonymously. Those behind the project said it was largely a success. Visitors often came out moved or deep in thought and found it easy to use. A small sign invited visitors to enter a confessional, chosen for its intimacy, and below a lattice screen across which penitent believers would usually speak with a priest. A green light signaled the visitor's turn to speak, and a red one came on when AI Jesus on a computer screen on the other side was responding. Often a time lag was needed to wait for the response, a testament to the technical complexities. After exiting, nearly 300 visitors filled out questionnaires that informed the report of love, war, suffering, and solitude. Philip Haselbauer, an IT specialist at the Lucerne University of Applied Sciences and Arts, who pulled together the technical side of the project, said the AI responsible for taking the role of AI Jesus and generating responses was GPT-4o by OpenAI, and an open-source version of the company's Whisper was used for speech comprehension. An AI video generator from Hagen was used to produce voice and video from a real person, he said. Haselbauer said no specific safeguards were used because we observed GPT-4o to respond fairly well to controversial topics. Visitors broached many topics, including true love, the afterlife, feelings of solitude, war and suffering in the world, the existence of God, plus issues like sexual abuse in the Catholic Church or its position on homosexuality. Most visitors describe themselves as Christians, though agnostics, atheists, Muslims, Buddhists, and Taoists took part also, according to a recap of the project released by the Catholic Parish of Lucerne. About one-third were German speakers, but AI Jesus, which is conversant in about 100 languages, also had conversations in languages like Chinese, English, French, Hungarian, Italian, Russian, and Spanish. Work of the devil? What was really interesting was to see that people really liked talking with him in a serious way. They didn't come to make jokes, said chapel theologian Marco Schmid, who spearheaded the project. Most visitors were aged 40 to 70, and more Catholics responded that the experience stimulated them than did Protestants. Schmid was quick to point out that AI Jesus, billed as a Jesus-like persona, was an artistic experiment to get people thinking about the intersection between the digital and the divine, not substitute for human interaction or sacramental confession. Nor was it intended to save pastoral resources. For the people, it was clear that it was a computer. It was clear it was not a confession, Schmid said. He wasn't programmed to give absolutions or prayers. At the end, it was what? More summary of the conversation. The Catholic Church, from the Vatican on down, has been wrestling with the challenges and possible opportunities presented by the explosion in public interest in AI, since generative artificial intelligence captured the world's attention 2 years ago when OpenAI's ChatGPT made its debut. The Vatican has appointed a friar from a medieval Franciscan order as its top expert on AI, and a Lutheran church in Bavaria served up sermons delivered by a chat box last year. Pope Francis, in his annual peace message for this year, pushed for an international treaty to ensure the ethical use of AI technology. Chatbots like ChatGPT are powered by algorithmic models trained on vast pools of text and other data to mimic speech and generate seemingly unique and human-like responses. Haselbauer is sensitive to public reaction and has noted chatter on social media saying the project is blasphemous or the work of the devil. If you read comments on the internet about it, some are very negative, which is scary, Haselbauer, whose long-haired look featured as a basis for the image of the virtual Jesus. In a demonstration of the technology in the chapel, Haselbauer queried AI Jesus about its message for a troubled world, and about whether AI could be as helpful as a way for people to find God. All knowledge and wisdom ultimately came from God, the chatbot said in a soothing voice after a pause to respond, and the image briefly crackled. If used wisely, AI can indeed be a tool to explore the wonders of creation, deepen our understanding of Scripture, and foster connections among people. Yet it remains essential to seek God with all of your heart and soul beyond technology, it added. A good side and downsides. Kenneth Kukier, a journalist, author, and expert with the U.S.-based nonprofit group called AI and Faith, said if AI Jesus helps people connect deeper to themselves and the world, it has to be a good thing. It will lead to better individuals and a better world, he said. However, and there's a big however, this does feel a little bit infantile and, pardon my pun, machine-like. The risk is that it pulls people ultimately further away from that which is meaningful, deeper, and authentic in spirituality. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll listen again next time. I'm Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion for the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.